everyone. Welcome to the Meal Mentor Podcast. I'm your host, Lindsay S. Nixon. This is episode 4 of season 2, where we talk about just making it work, being healthy, how to make the meal plans in our lives, and just talk about the challenges we all kind of go through and the different perspectives, real people, real lives, making it work. If you want to learn more, visit getmealplans.com. But let me jump right in and introduce today's co-pilot, my guest, Rachel. She's amazing and awesome, and I've been dying to get a professional musician on the podcast, and season 2, episode 1, we talked a little bit about my friend who is on tour and how she made it work. But today we have another musician on, super exciting. Anyway, I'm blathering. Hey, Rachel, what's up?
Hi, how are you?
Great. Thank you so much for coming on today.
Well, thanks for having me.
So when you came to me and said you would be on the podcast, thanks a million, I loved, because you had so many great topics to talk about, and one of which is that you were afraid of carbohydrates because of type 1 diabetes. And I think a lot of us, even if we don't have diabetes or aren't at risk for diabetes, we're like scared of potatoes, even though they're extremely healthy. And when a potato is unhealthy, it's not the potato, it's the company it keeps, the sour cream, the bacon, the oil. I thought maybe you could tell us about that.
Right. Well, I was diagnosed with type 1 diabetes when I was 5 years old.
Oh, goodness.
So it's been a while. If you don't know that, like, some people don't know the difference between type 1 and type 2. Even, like, I know I've gone to the hospital a few times and even the nurses aren't quite sure sometimes. But type 1 is where your body is an autoimmune kind of thing. So your body will destroy the islet cells in your pancreas, so you don't produce insulin anymore. And insulin is a hormone that, like, controls your blood sugars, like, helps you absorb glucose, which is sugar. So type 2 is actually, it's what we associate usually. It's what we hear a lot about now. It's what we associate with, like, unhealthy kind of diet and things like that. And that's where your body just can't use the insulin or absorb it. So the kind I have is, people don't know kind of where it comes from, and it's often called juvenile diabetes because you get it when you're very young, and they don't know how to prevent it or cure it or anything like that. So my blood sugars can go up and they can go down. But the thing that's very common when you get any kind of diabetes is they tell you to avoid carbohydrates. So my whole life, I drank diet sodas. We never really ate any pasta. I was always afraid of carbs, and for a good reason for a while too, because if I ate any carbs, I had to take a shot. So no.
Yeah, that would scare me as a kid too.
Right. So I wasn't so keen on them for a while. Eventually, I got an insulin pump, which kind of gets rid of the shots for the most part, so that's good. But it's always been ingrained in me to be very afraid of them, and they make you. My father has type 2, and a lot of my family members have type 2 as well. And they've been told, stay away from carbs, they make you fat. So I was always really afraid of them. And I know when I went and started the meal plans, it was last year, and I saw just, like, lots of carbs. I was like, oh no, it's so scary. But I tried, in the beginning I had done, like, eat to live kind of things, and I was just kind of miserable, and I always felt hungry, and I just, avoiding the carbs just wasn't making me happy. So I just decided I was just going to ignore everything I'd ever heard about it and try eating a bunch of potatoes. And it actually ended up lowering my blood sugars.
Wow.
So, yes, and I lost weight too. So they don't make you fat. And I haven't, unfortunately, convinced my type 2 family members to really come over to the dark side. But type 2, or my father actually saw kind of how I lost about 20 pounds. So he was kind of like, all right, I'm going to try the vegetarian thing a little bit. And he also lost 10 pounds. And
wow.
Sugar is improving too. So for any sort of diabetic, I feel like it has some really great benefits. And I wish they would stop telling people to avoid the carbs, because not only is that bad for the diabetics, but it's really just bad for everybody. You need the carbohydrates to function, have energy, and that sort of thing. So
Absolutely. Keep
you full. That's been a big part.
One thing I like to tell people when trying to explain the two is I say that people who have type 1, they have, like, a lazy pancreas.
Yeah.
It's not their fault. Yeah. But type 2, the thing is, with type 1, you can't reverse it. Like you said, you get diagnosed usually as a child, and it's yours for life. It's this, it's like an autoimmune disease. But with type 2, Most of the time, I mean, probably 99.5% of the cases, it can be reversed and reversed with diet. So you don't have to have insulin. But some people, such as Rachel, have to continue to have insulin forever. But as she's doing, you can manage it a whole lot better with your diet. And that does involve carbohydrates. And it's crazy to me that to this day and age with, I mean, there's mountains of research, mountains of studies that low carb doesn't actually help diabetic patients. And a lot of times they continue to just gain more and more weight, even though they're doing the quote low carb and carbs quote make them fat. And there's substantial research that actually eating carbohydrates, granted not processed ones, but whole ones like sweet potatoes, can help them manage it and lose weight. But yet, I don't know, we're still hearing low carb, low carb, low carb, despite research that says the exact opposite.
Yes.
Yeah, and as you said, you don't feel good. When you don't eat carbohydrates, you don't have energy. You don't feel satiated. You just feel like poop.
Right. No, totally. That's my father. I'm impressed with his.
Yeah, that's
awesome. He went on, like, did the Atkins thing. He did it for, it seemed like about 10 years, which I tried it for like a week, I think. And you do, you know, we've talked about this before on the podcast where you do lose weight because you're sick. Mm-hmm. But you just feel awful. So I just remember feeling so terrible. I'd lost the weight, but I just felt like really nasty. But he did it for so long. And I think eventually you can't do it anymore. So that's where I think. And the fat will, what fat does is it kind of like messes. And I knew this even when I was doing low carb things, is pizza was really hard to manage when you were, you know, trying to bolus for things with the insulin and manage it in type 1 and type 2, because the fat will kind of mess with how the carbs are absorbed. So mm-hmm. It takes a longer time for them to be absorbed, and then the insulin doesn't quite get to it or things like that. So it's good to.
I'm glad really you brought that up, because it's really dietary fat that's the problem and what diabetics should be concerned about, not the carbohydrates. And Dr. Neil Bernard has an amazing video on YouTube about this exactly. And he uses this analogy of a key, of like trying to put a key in a keyhole. But if you're eating the wrong foods, you can't get the key in the keyhole because it's like full of gum, basically. And so that's amazing. And he also has a book, Prevent and Reverse Diabetes. Same again, Dr. Neil Bernard. Wonderful. And like I said, even if you have type 1, which can't be prevented and reversed, it is still a valuable research resource because it can tell you how to tweak your diet, as Rachel has been doing so beautifully.
It's helped a lot, definitely. So
one thing, and this is something that you and I both have in common, is we both suffered needlessly from migraines. And from a very young age, I had migraines. I was 9 when I was diagnosed, and doctors didn't even want to diagnose me because I was so young. And I know that migraines were a real struggle for you as well. And that's sort of kind of how you ended up giving up, you know, meat and animal products like cheese. Can you tell us about that?
Yes. That's kind of what first, and it's weird, like when I was younger, I kind of just accepted that I had a headache every day. It was that frequent, and I didn't really know what it was like to be normal until I went to college, and I stopped eating a lot of like red meat because you can't really afford it then when you're first starting out. So I just wasn't buying it. And then when I would go home, you know, we ate a lot of like steak and that sort of thing, very red, rich meats. And so, I would get my headache again. And I was like, oh, okay. So I cut that out first. And then I started to notice that like cheese, especially, and like other dairy products still would give me headaches as well. So, and I think I asked a few doctors about it, and they said that there's like a compound called tyramine, which comes from a sort of protein. And it's really prevalent in like high protein meats and cheese, especially like aged cheeses and things like that. So, and it will cause migraines. So once I kind of got rid of dairy and cheese and all those sorts of things, I got rid of the headaches. And it was really weird because I had never like lived life without them. So I was like, oh, I feel great. So it's really interesting. You don't realize you feel super sick until you feel very, very healthy. So that made a really big difference. And that's kind of where I started to like start thinking about vegetarian and vegan sorts of foods. And I later kind of watched, I was trying to help a friend. He said he wanted to, you know, he's always struggled with overeating. And so I went on Netflix and I was like, there's got to be a life-changing thing on here somewhere. And then I found, I watched Forks Over Knives. And it freaked me out. And I was like, oh my gosh. So I immediately went and bought the Engine 2 book and kind of just started. I ate the same sandwich every single day. But it really, like, I just felt lighter and I had a lot more energy. And of course, the headaches were gone. So that was a huge plus. And it's definitely been a lot easier to deal with. So, and I don't think I almost never get headaches now or migraines.
That's awesome.
Yes, it's great.
And I love that you said, because we hear this all the time in, you know, in the forums and in the group, all the members say this all the time, but we've also heard it, I think, on every episode of this podcast, is that you just don't know how awful and miserable you felt until you have felt well.
Yes.
Because it's like you, when you're living in this state of feeling bad, like you said, you just accepted it. You thought, I'm just going to have a headache every day of my life. That's my reality.
Yep. And yes. You don't have to live that way.
And that was me. Like I could cry about it, talking about it, is I missed Halloween every single year because I had a migraine and I had to leave almost every birthday party and sleep over. And that was really hard. And it was one, because I was missing out. Two, I had to leave my friends. Three, it was embarrassing. It was horribly embarrassing for a kid to have to leave because they had a headache.
Right, right.
You know, I was always afraid. I didn't want to go to a sleepover because I was scared I'd get one and I'd throw up at their house. And it's like, I didn't have to live that way.
Right.
Those things didn't have to happen to me, but I thought that was my life. I got dealt a bad card.
Yes, yes.
Why me? This is my life. This stinks, you know? And same thing is I used to have horrible stomach issues. I would never want to be more than 10 feet from a bathroom. It interrupted being able to go out on dates and social and even anything. I was just always so scared because what if my stomach acted up? I don't have this problem anymore. And I'm like, I can't believe I thought popping Tums every day was normal.
Yes.
Oh, I didn't have to live that way.
I know. My boyfriend he's been vegetarian for 13 years and he is just constantly eating Tums. And I'm like, he accepts it. He's like, that's just how my life is. I'm like, no, try these foods. I promise it'll help. But yeah, that seems to be a lot of people will just kind of accept, you know, what's happening to them sometimes. But it often is connected to your food. I feel like a lot of different things could be fixed just by switching a few things out. So, and yeah, I didn't go entirely like plant-based. I was a pretty unhealthy vegan for a very long time after I realized, you know, these things caused headaches, but I still felt healthier, bizarrely enough. Like, so I felt even better after I started doing the plant-based kind of thing. But even just like stopping eating just red meat made it so different. So
I'm really glad you said that because I feel like a lot of people think you have to get it all right. And it is in some ways a combination lock, you know, to get the maximum of the maximum, you do need to get all four numbers. It is like the lottery ticket. You don't get the big prize for one. But like you said, you at least get some progress along the way and get some benefits. A lot of people just giving up cheese feel remarkably better, as you did. And then when you went to Whole Foods, you felt even more great, but you could still feel a little bit better today.
Yes, exactly. And that's like, it was kind of, I tried to go from like really unhealthy to very, very healthy, unfortunately. So that kind of like made it very slow for me to figure things out because I remember I bought the Engine 2 book and I tried to cook everything in there. And I just remember being kind of like, I know I felt better, but for some reason I just wasn't excited. And then, you know, I would pick things that were just very extreme, like Eat to Live or something like that. And then of course, you know, my tummy killing me because all you eat are just tons of cruciferous vegetables. So it was not pleasant. And then I remember I found, or Kindle had one of those $1.99 book sales and Happy Herbivore, the cookbook, was on sale. And I cooked chickpeas and dumplings. And I remember just like, I almost cried. I was it was so easy. And it was something that was comforting and something I was used to as opposed to like really weird, you know, kind of extreme vegan mom that. So it really, like, then I started to realize I could live without oil and I could live without fake meats because it was possible to, you know, eat something simple, but like something that really reminded me of the food I was eating before also. So that was super helpful. I think like maybe you can, and it works differently for everybody. Like some people I would recommend kind of eating really unfamiliar foods so that you're not expecting it to taste like mac and cheese. But for me, I really needed, you know, growing up, I'm in Georgia right now and I grew up here. So I ate a lot of rich, like cream of mushroom, cream of chicken.
Like kind Southern of soul comfort food.
Yes. Yeah. So that was really important, was to get like gravy kind of foods, just to, you know, and not have like too many ingredients. I like how all of the meal plan meals in the Happy Herbivore foods often have, you know, they have a bean and a veggie and then, you know, some grains or something like that. So it's very simple and you just digest things easier and you're just a little bit happier. So you can always go on and try like really funky vegan or plant-based kind of recipes later on when you're, you know, ready for that. But in the beginning, it was really hard at first. And I read The Starch Solution, and he had a really great point in saying, like, if you want to eat the same meal over and over again, go for it. Because, and I did that for a long time. Like, I ate the same sandwich and, like, I ate chickpeas and dumplings for a really long time because it made it easier to stick with it. And I could, you know, every once in a while add in a new thing when I felt like it. But that way you're just, you're in a happy place and it's good. So.
And I really appreciate your honesty about your journey and how it was sort of a struggle for you. Because I think a lot of people, and I'm in this group, do what you said, is you try to go from 0 to 100, but you really can't. I mean, that's just not realistic. And I like to use the example, if I decided to go run a marathon, I wouldn't expect myself to get up right now and go run 26 miles. I would run a mile, or maybe I would just walk a mile. And then each week I would increase a little more until I was ready physically and mentally to go run 26.2 miles. And we have to do the same with transitioning and changing our diet. We cannot go all the way. Ability has to supersede your motivation.
Right, exactly. I've definitely found it's really a big mental game. You have to trick yourself into things sometimes. So just adding things, small things, whether they're really familiar or a little different for you, then that's a good way to do it.
And that's a good point you made about the substitutes too. So for me, I never liked the taste of meat. And so I was never attracted to meat substitutes. So it wasn't a thing for me. But my husband, for example, was a big meat guy, loved meat, really loved cheese. And the idea of life without cheese was no life at all. And so to give him the substitutes early on, like you, to have that comfort, even though it was a little different, made it 1,000 times easier for him. But I've known people who are like, you know what? It just doesn't taste the same. And I don't want to keep looking for it on my plate. It's really, like you said, you have to know what is right for you to help you get through your transition smoothly.
Right. Yes, definitely.
And so, I mean, for some people, the substitutes are extremely helpful. For some people, they're not. It really depends. But I was a really junk food vegan when I first started. I was like, oh, French fries are vegan, so I can go order French fries for dinner. Oh, look, Oreos are vegan. I lived on like pasta and Boca burgers.
Right.
And I still lost weight and I still felt a lot better. But I felt really great when I started eating whole foods. But you can do that wrong too. And that's also something you and I both have in common. I also tried to follow Eat to Live at first. And it was hard for me to go from eating McDonald's drive-through to now my life was predominantly green and yellow vegetables. And I just failed at it. And I don't know that the diet is wrong, but I was like, this is not happening. I can't go from chicken McNuggets to zucchini. And I happen to love zucchini now and I eat it all the time. But back then it was like, no, I had a long transition.
Right. No, it can take a while. Definitely. It took, you know, like I said, 4 or 5 years it took me to finally get to like the plant-based kind of area, and going through a bunch of different books and different, you know, blogs and stuff like that. But definitely. And what I did notice, which is interesting, like when I first started, I actually gained a lot of weight because I never completely cut out the oil. Even when I like, I knew because I watched Forks Over Knives first, I knew I probably should not be eating like, you know, veggie dogs and like the processed vegan meat. So I tried to eat kind of a whole food, but I ate so many nuts and so many avocados and lots of oil. And it just like, because I felt like a tablespoon of oil couldn't be that terrible. But once I cut it out, I was like, oh, okay. It was really, everything changed. It was almost more of a surprise than when I first went vegan, because like my skin cleared up. I was like, I felt really amazing. And I have never, ever been able to lose weight like ever in my life. It's always been an uphill kind of thing going on. I've never been like particularly super duper heavy or anything like that, but like, it's just always increased very slowly over time. So it felt like no matter what I tried would never work. But once the oil was cut out, and also like being when I realized how much oil was in like pretty much everything, like marinara sauce, that made me so mad. When
I know. It's like in everything. And you're like, there's no need for it to be in this can of frozen corn. It's like, no, or bag of frozen corn, not a can. Why? No.
Yes, I was just like standing in the grocery store screaming. I was so mad because there's just like most of it. So, you know, I just, once I found like those little hidden places where there's oil, where there probably shouldn't be, you know, it made a huge difference. So, you know, if you are struggling with any, you know, you feel like you really have made a ton of changes if you have gone vegan or like really close to plant-based, but it's very frustrating, to realize that, you know, there's just been these like secret little amounts of fat and oil everywhere, in like, you know, like the marinara sauce or something like that. So that if you can kind of get rid of that, then it makes a really big difference.
Well, that was me too, is I just like kept gaining and losing the same 10 pounds over and over. And I was pretty plant-based, but I was like you. I was like, oh, a little oil in this is not so bad. Oh, I'm not there. It's not that big deal. And I just wasn't happening. But when I cut it out too, I was like, I just lost 10 pounds. I actually went lower than any weight I have ever been since I was a kid, like even high school. And I always was the same, you know, I was slowly gaining weight, but I was never really slender. I was kind of thin, but I was like, wow, it's amazing. This small little change of just not using the oil. And my too with my skin is I have had embarrassing acne all my life. I was so embarrassed as a teenager. I never wanted people to take pictures of me. And when I got rid of dairy, my acne really cleared, but I still struggled. I still had a few pimples, especially during certain times of the month. Once I got rid of oil, I have never had as beautiful and as clear of skin as I do now.
Yep.
And if I go out and like it's a birthday party and they have a vegan cake, even if I have the smallest slice on the planet, I get a pimple. Not kidding. I'm like, how did you know?
Yep. No, it's amazing. It's like very small amounts of it can make a pretty big difference in your weight or, you know, your skin or anything like that, even just how you feel. So yes, it's a, it's everywhere. So it's just like sugar, there's sugar and everything, there's oil and everything. They find a way to put it into something. So yes, so making things yourself is definitely really helpful. So that was really another part of the meal plans that really kind of changed how I was eating and things. So yes, very good stuff.
And so speaking of the meal plan, so you've been with us for almost a year now, so that's exciting. And I know you kind of started the meal plans because you were already sort of familiar with my work and my cookbooks and you like the recipes, but you were telling me before we started podcasting that it's really helped you just manage your life, especially because you have a schedule that's not a 9-to-5. It's very alternate and changing. And this can kind of also bring up, you know, that you're a musician. So I thought maybe you could kind of describe your life and tell us how you're making it work. Because you're very different than most people. You don't like go to an office Monday through Friday.
Right. Yes. So I am a classically trained cellist. So I went to school for a music performance degree and I currently now I've just freelance a lot. So I, you know, play for a bunch of different things, whether it's like I'm contracted by symphonies or, you know, contemporary kind of popular music or anything like that. I also do a lot of just teaching cello lessons. So especially with that, I'm actually at home all the time. But what I have the most trouble with being that busy all the time is you're just like on all the time. And there's really not a lot of breaks for cooking or even eating. So I went on the forums recently and I was like, I'm really tired. And then I think what we eventually realized was I just wasn't eating because I just would forget, like I'd wake up and go run somewhere and then, you know, come back and just forget to eat. So the meal plan, the batch cooking part of the meal plans has really changed things. If I can find a couple of hours to just make everything, then, you know, I can just I remember that it's in there and I can eat everything a lot or eat it while I'm teaching a lesson or something like that. So that's really helped. I think with like, if you have any sort of like career like that, you know, I imagine maybe nurses are really super busy or anybody.
Or anyone like, that's a freelancer, really.
Anybody with weird, you know, I have very strange hours. I work a lot in the evening and stuff. So it's really helpful to just have everything in there already. I've tried to cook things meal by meal, but you always, you know, you come home and you're tired and you just don't want to do it. So I get really freaked out when things are super dirty. So that has cut down on the stress too, just by, cause you know, when you're tired and you've just made a meal, you never want to clean. So things up. And, then I was just really super, super busy and miserable. So, it's just helped to just get it all out of the way. And, you know, then I can even just take it with me somewhere. Cause you know, rehearsals tend to be very long and, you know, you have a couple breaks in between where you can just, you know, eat a nice little meal or something. So, yes, batch cooking is definitely.
I'm glad you brought up rehearsals, because I think that's another really thing that's different about your job is, well, one, like you said, you're often working nights and weekends because you're playing at times when people are listening to music because they're not at work. Right. But you also have like long rehearsals and long concerts, and you're working at a place that doesn't even have a kitchen. Like, you're not going to a office building where there might be like a communal area where there's a microwave or something. I mean, you're literally just like taking it with you. So you're really making it work in more ways than a lot of us have to.
Right. Yeah. No, and it's been kind of good, because then I'm not tempted to buy as many things. Like, I don't have a break room or something, or a vending machine nearby, but that's also kind of been a little like, I'll just realize like towards the end of the day that I haven't eaten anything. I was like, oh no. So, and there's nothing around for me to eat even.
Right.
So,
cause you're not at a place where you could like go walk to a Subway or something. You're like in a concert hall.
Right, exactly. So
it's like, what do they have for sale? Maybe peanuts and wine, maybe, like,
right, yes.
Not exactly the ideal dinner.
Yes, exactly. So it's been really great to just have things that I can take my Tupperware and just go to rehearsals or a concert or something, and everybody's always really jealous of my food.
Oh, I bet. They're like, wait, what is that you have that's cooked and looks fresh and colorful?
Yes, exactly. but this is also, it's very sad. I watch a lot of like my colleagues and they are, you know, feeling like really there's a lot of sickness and, you know, things like that, because it's just kind of an unhealthy sort of way to live if you're not, you know, nourishing your body along the way. So, cause you're just so, you know, you're just constantly going from, a new thing to another thing. So it's, yeah, it's kind of hard to watch. So I try to like share my food with everybody and see if I can convert some musicians along the way.
It's funny, because I actually had as a question I've been dying to ask you is, do you think that having changed your diet and also with the meal plans, has it improved your performance or even your stamina? And so now I'm really curious, having heard you seen this realization, that at least you don't get sick in terms of common cold as other musicians.
Yes. Oh my God. So yeah, all of those things are, you know, we have to, especially like when I was in school, I had to practice for hours and hours and hours. So that was really helpful in that, like, and this helps if you're in school or having to do, or honestly, anybody who has to work a lot, you know, you're able to kind of focus on things for longer. My memory, bizarrely enough, I feel like has improved a lot. And then of course, just stamina, like I'm just more awake and lively and things like that. And then also not getting sick has been really important, because if a musician gets sick, we just don't get paid.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, you don't get paid. You don't have sick days.
Right. And I used to, my cello teacher in college, she's amazing, but she would get sick a lot. But she would try to work through the illness. And I was like, oh goodness. So that was no good either. So she was just, you know, a lot of the times would feel really sick all the time and would still try to go to work, because, you know, if you don't go to work, you don't get paid. You often don't get called back. So, it's really important to be just healthy all the time as a musician and, or freelancer or contractor of some sort. So,
and one thing to keep in mind with musicians too, is you come into contact with way more people than the average person, just because you're constantly around, you're in close quarters with other musicians. And then you're at these places like a concert hall where there's hundreds and hundreds of people, lots of germs everywhere. You're using all these public bathrooms. So your immune system is really put up to the challenge compared to say mine, where I see like five other coworkers and that's it.
Definitely. And especially, you know, almost all musicians end up like teaching. So, you know, my little
kids, students,
like,
right.
So they'll come in like sneezing and I'm like, oh, go. So, you know, it's definitely really, really helped with that. I haven't been sick in like, I maybe get like a very minor one day kind of cold, once a year kind of thing. So, but it's not enough to put me out of the job or anything like that. So, Yes, it's been very, very helpful. I wish more musicians could kind of, you know, experience that too. So,
one thing that I'm also really impressed by, of course, I'm obsessed with Yo-Yo Ma. So the fact that you're a classically trained cellist makes me, you know, just I'm fangirling out over here. But I love that you found another passion having changed your diet, which is that you're really, really into whole food, vegan beauty as well. So it's not just even about the food anymore. It's also about the products you use on your body. And I know a lot of women always email me and ask me about cosmetics or shampoos. And I'm hoping that you can give us some tips and tell us how you, you know, how you're living this new passion.
Yes. And this is definitely, once again, a thing to take like kind of step by step. I've always been kind of just adding things, trying to green my life up a little bit more. So one thing that really was interesting to me, like, especially as a musician, when I like want to, you know, put on some makeup or something like that, were beauty products. And I think I recently saw something that said that there's like 1300 some odd chemicals and ingredients that are banned in cosmetics in like Europe.
And wow.
There are only 8 banned in the United States. Yes. Yeah, so.
Oh my gosh.
Right. So it's a little disturbing, like that. So, and unfortunately there's not a lot, there is a good amount of research done on the chemicals, in makeup, but it's not really put out there, of course, just as is like diet and stuff, just because people aren't really looking for it, I guess, or don't want to hear it. Cause my parents are, or like my family's always making fun of me. They're like, you're just always trying to make something more complicated. And I'm like, no, I know. And I can't really like say exactly that this gives you cancer or something like that. But sometimes I'm just like, why take the risk if
right.
you are, you know, if, especially if you're trying to be good to your body with the things you put in it, you know, same thing
for what you put on it.
Exactly. Because your body can, you know, systemically absorb things. So, I feel that it's almost just as important. And, I thought of something like that would be easy for, you know, also women and men to change, really easily. It's the first thing I changed was like deodorant, and you've probably all heard about kind of like weird deodorant ingredients and stuff like that. But that is definitely something I would, because it's so close to, I know for women, it's very close to your chest area. So it's found in like the parabens is a big, thing to avoid. Those are they're a preservative that they put in a lot of makeup. And they have actually found them in breast cancer tumors. So
wow.
Once again, I can't say exactly that it gives you cancer, but, just by knowing that, it is a little bit suspicious. So, deodorant would be the first thing I would, you know, kind of look for. And there's a bunch of, you know, Crystal is a brand that I used a lot. The only thing that might be a little jarring for somebody coming from like a regular deodorant that you buy at the drugstore or something is that it's not an antiperspirant. A lot of natural deodorants aren't antiperspirants, just because that's a little, your body should sweat. It's very
your body
healthy.
Should sweat,
so,
yeah.
Yeah. So, Crystal it's been very good. It just kind of rolls on and you can find it at like Whole Foods, but you can also, I know they sell it at like Targets and even Walmart. So
it's
really easy to find. I did try, Tom's is also a big, I'm not entirely sold on the ingredients yet, but I know it kind of made me smell weird. So I just,
worst rash of my life.
Yes.
In my armpits. This is not the place to get a rash.
Yes. So I wasn't sold on that brand, but you know, if that's something that works for you, then you totally.
Yeah, I mean, it works for my husband. He loves it, but I mean, no, not for me.
Yeah, I wasn't. And, but I did have a lot of luck with the Crystal brand. That was really good. And for a long time I used for my face makeup kind of things, I would use like Tarte or something like that. But I realized one day that I had never actually looked at the ingredients. I unfortunately just went with the all natural label. As you know, you see this a lot in food now and things.
Oh yeah, labels. You can never believe the labels. It's marketing, people, marketing.
Yes. So I felt so dumb. I was like, oh my gosh, I haven't actually looked at them. And it was actually not a great, so makeup, I feel like, is especially tricky to, you know, figure if they, lots of places will label, things like natural and even like cruelty free and vegan, which was very important to me, is often mislabeled. So that's kind of a serious bummer. But like, a few of the, like, if you're interested in like some, companies that I feel like I trust now is, Silk Naturals is actually, it's a silknaturals.com. They sell, a lot of vegan makeup, which was, like I said, super important to me. And it's got like very few chemicals and things. It's like a mineral based makeup. But the best part about that was it was really cheap. Like you can get things.
Oh, very cheap. I like cheap.
And that's often kind of the thing that freaks people out about organic makeup is that it can be very, very expensive. They jack up the price a lot. So this website was really cool because it ends up being like the drugstore prices we were probably used to paying for, some of the conventional makeup. So I was really a big fan of that. And then if you're like super pure about it, I know they have a couple stores, I think in like California and things, but the website is the number 100 and then the words % pure, 100% pure. And they're really cool because they fruit pigment all of their so they fruit pigment all of the makeup. So I was like, oh, that's very plant-based. It's good stuff.
Literally plant-based.
Right, exactly. So they're a little bit on the pricier side, but if that's something that's, of course, if you're putting it on your face every day or something like that, that can be a really good place to look for things. So, and that being said, it is possible to make your own makeup and body body washes and things. I've tried it before, but I have extremely sensitive skin, so I didn't have the best luck with it. But there are tons of like blogs and things online that if you have a ton of leftover oil because you stop eating it, that's a good thing to do with it. You can make lots of different kinds of makeup.
That's good point. That's a good way to reuse your. I never even thought of that, even though I know because my sister, for example, she had a bunch of oil left over and she made shaving cream from it.
Right. Yeah. No, you can do all kinds of things with just rubbing oil on your body or in your hair, things like that. So that's a cool way to do it, too. I know I made like a bronzer or a foundation once out of you can use like cinnamon and like ginger and things like that to kind of pigment the powder. It's cool stuff. So
basically what you're telling me is if we ever got stuck on an island together, you would be able to make makeup for us.
Yes.
So we would look glamorous as island refugees stuck, from a shipwreck. Good to know.
Right. Yes. That would be good stuff. So, that's definitely something I try to also incorporate into my life. Just very step by step, trying to take out some weird ingredients. So,
no, I like that, and I'm glad you brought up the cruelty-free thing. I was looking at some lotion, and of course, we're cruelty-free and not tested on animals or whatever. But then I went and looked it up online, and what it said, and you're going to think this is so sketchy. What it said was the final product wasn't tested on animals. So that means any of the ingredients that were used to make the product, it could have been. And I'm like, this is so, no, you can't really call this cruelty-free. No,
that's deceitful.
I was like so upset.
Right. No, that's all. Yeah. So that's why I try to if I do find a company, I try to research. I've even called a few and just asked what does this mean? And, the ones I've talked about definitely seem to know what they're doing, but yeah, a lot of places they call it greenwashing. So they'll just kind of it'll be very tricky about it. It's kind of cruel. So, you just have to be very super careful about it. Places like Ulta and Sephora, unfortunately, if you're definitely avoid those. I've actually found Etsy if you're looking for, small Etsy.
Oh, that's a really great point. Yeah.
Yes, they make a lot of good things. And it's a little bit, like I said, I tried making makeup once and it was a process. So it's kind of cool to have somebody else who knows what they're doing with maybe.
Well, and that's the nice thing about Etsy is it is going to be more expensive, but like you said, it is going to be handmade and you're going to be supporting someone else.
Yes, exactly. So
you're doing the thing you want to do for yourself, but maybe you're too intimidated or you don't have time for. And I've done that. I buy a lot of soaps and body washes off Etsy. We have a lot of weird allergies. And so it's buying from the store isn't an option, even if I wanted it to be. But I like knowing I'm supporting somebody out there whose passion is soap.
Yes, exactly. It's a win-win there. So that's a really good place to look too. So
I use, if you have sensitive skin, this might not work for you, but I actually use baking soda for a lot of stuff. I'll wash my face with it. I'll use it as deodorant. If you're really sensitive, it might not work. And some people, their chemistry doesn't work. And I know it makes them raw or gives them a rash, but it works well for people who have oily skin, like a Mediterranean type person. You, I know, are very, very beautiful, very fair, very light skin. But it works really well. And I actually, a friend friend of mine, another meal mentor, actually, she had suggested using coconut oil to get off eye makeup because I had this problem where I could never get all of the mascara or eyeliner off my eye, no matter what I use. And she's like, just use coconut oil. And I'm like, really? Works yeah. so well.
Yeah, I do the same thing, like oil cleansers and things will get rid of makeup really easy. I was very impressed too, because I used to use these wipes and they just like hurt my eyes.
Yeah, that's what I was like rubbing my, you know how if you have the sniffles by like the third day, your nose is raw, no matter how gentle you are with the tissue, like that was happening with my eyes.
Yes, I looked pretty ridiculous. It was so red. So oils are, they do really great things as long as you're not eating them.
In the winter, the heat, like we have dry heat. And so my skin gets dry from the dry heat, and a little bit of oil really helps my elbows and my knees that tend to crack. And right. I used to spend tons of money on all this like hippy dippy lotion, and I'd slather it on like 5 times a day. But amazingly, just this little bit of oil on my elbows and knees, it's problem solved.
Yes, exactly. And I posted this somewhere, I think on the Facebook group, but like when I'm looking at makeup ingredients, I always see oil and then I instinctively start to put it back. And then I'm like, oh yeah, never mind. This oil's good. We're just going to put it on my
the body, not in the mouth is generally what I say. On the body, not in the mouth. And I've even put it like, I put avocado in my hair sometimes. I'm like, you need some conditioning. Let's put some coconut oil or some avocado in my hair. So.
Right. Exactly. Now avocados, oil, and like baking soda, they do really amazing things. So.
Like I said, we're going to be ready for the island boat crash or the zombie apocalypse. We're still going to be fabulous.
This is a glam island.
It will be. It'll be the glam island. Well, it has been amazing having you on, Rachel. You gave so much wonderful advice. I appreciate all your realism and honesty. So fun. So glad you came on. Do you have any last wisdom to impart to the other members and listeners?
Well, I saved this for last.
Oh!
It was, and I'm still like a little like freaked out that it happened, but I have been testing several Waffle Houses, and I've noted, cause they're like everywhere, they're 24 hours. So if you're ever in a serious, like I think it was one of those times I hadn't eaten. I went to a Waffle House and I asked them if it was at all possible to like steam the hash browns or cook them without oil. And they were like, oh yeah, we do that all the time. What?
What?
I was like, can I watch you do it? And sure enough, they just like, they put a bunch of water down and you can ask them to put it in a different pan. And they stick like a plate over it and they just steam them. And I tried it several times. I couldn't believe it at first. I was afraid to tell anybody because I wasn't sure that it was actually really happening. But I was like, that is the place I never thought I would be able to set foot in again has like potatoes and they can cook it for me without oil. And they don't That's even awesome. Really bat an eyelash about it. They don't think it's weird. It just apparently they do that a lot. So.
Yeah, my one of my assistants, Carly, she has to travel to see her family pretty regularly. And she goes on this like long stretch where there's like no restaurants, but there's a Denny's and they do a quote dry fry for her too. And she says a lot of times they don't bat an eye either when she's like, can I do a dry fry, no oil? They're like, sure. And they just keep going. So maybe we're all just a little self-conscious and don't need to be.
Yeah, so that would be my advice. I think like eating out is really terrifying and, you know, I still am really afraid to ask for certain things, but just, you know, just try it out and see what happens. And if, when in doubt, you can go to a Waffle House. Good stuff. So,
or Wendy's and get your potato and then stop at the gas station for salsa. That's my fave.
Right. Yes, exactly. That's just don't. My fave. I think what upsets me is seeing people be really apologetic, whether it's to your family or to people you're giving your money to for food. Don't ever apologize. It's, you know, it's totally reasonable. I think people have weirder requests for food. So,
yes, very true.
What you're requesting is not that strange. And you should never apologize for it in any aspect of what you're doing. Whether it's like at your wedding or you want to have vegan food, just it's your day, it's your meal. You can, don't apologize for it.
I love that. Yes. Don't be sorry. You're paying, you know, don't be sorry. It's your way. So, well, thanks again, Rachel. It was amazing. I'll have to have you on again. I loved recording with you. Everyone who's listening, who wants to learn more, you can visit getmealplans.com. Of course, if you're in the forums or in the member group, you can talk to Rachel. She's really friendly and she always has great advice. And if you love the podcast, we would really appreciate it if you could leave a review. They really help. And thanks for listening. And thanks again for Rachel. Have a great day, everyone.